Hey, this is Steve Bloom, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
There's nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello and welcome back into our studio. You are now inside Studio 2009. I am, of course, Steve Chu and Mike. Joining me for the first time on this show is my good buddy, Tom DJ. Hello, sir.
How are you, sir?
That is a loaded question. That is a very loaded question, and there aren't enough milkshakes in the world to remove that gunpowder. Yes, we are here. We're doing a double feature on Studio 2009. This is episode 29 of this show. It is going to be an action-packed double feature because we're going to be talking about the Netflix film Gunpowder Milkshake and another film called The Protégé. I want to remember this right. Was it you that suggested? I know you suggested to me The Protégé. Did you suggest to me?
You wanted me to sit with you to talk about Gunpowder Milkshake. And
right.
I said, because The Protégé and another film starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead called Kate all were released in literally weeks of each other, very close together.
Right, yeah.
So I had suggested doing all three, but you said, let's just do The Protégé. I did not know at the time The Protégé was directed by Martin Campbell, who is amazing. But
yes.
That's another story.
Yes, we will.
When the Martin Campbell credit came up at the end of at the film's closing credits, it said, that explains a lot.
Yeah, that makes a hell of a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It's like GoldenEye with girls.
two of the better Bond films of the last 25 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and on top of that, he did The Mask of Zorro.
Mm-hmm.
He did did a lot of great stuff. He also did things like Green Lantern, but he was work for hire on that one, so that don't count.
I think everybody on Green Lantern was work for hire, so that film doesn't count.
Yeah. Well, at least to the WB, it doesn't count.
I can't believe it's been a decade since that movie came out. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Yeah. 2011, so long ago.
Yeah. I'm at that age where I go, oh my God, at least once, because I realize that something that I thought was very recent has been like 3 years past.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely.
Wait, what are you talking about? Reservoir Dogs was released then.
Yeah, I thought it was released now.
Reservoir Dogs a little bit in relation to these films, actually.
Yeah, it's these two films are... They each have their own feeling to them, but they also feel like a bunch of other films that have come before them, and that's not a bad thing at all.
To be precise, both of these films seem obviously very heavily influenced by the John Wick franchise.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Yeah, it's like, I can see the wheels turning in these producers' minds, going like, John Wick was popular. Well, let's do an all-girl John Wick.
I've watched all three, and I love the Wick movies. I really do. I wasn't sure how, because I'm a person that I don't do well with blood, guts, and gore. That's why I'm not a... In general, that's why I'm not a horror person when it comes to that kind of stuff. But, I mean, the John Wick stuff is so quick. It's like, holy crap, he shot like seven people in like less than a second. And, yes, you see all seven shots, but it's not – they don't dwell on it. They don't like leave the camera, here's a bloody severed head and we're going to leave it here for 5 seconds. No, they just...
The emphasis John Wick is on action itself, which is why You have a sense of geography in all the action sequences. You, on top of that, they take the time to give you enough information so that you understand the character and feel for the character when the inciting incident happens.
Right, yeah.
Which is something that is does not happen in one of these films. So does not happen.
Yeah, it, yeah, it's, and I gotta say, I think we're gonna be on opposite sides of this. I know we are. I enjoyed both of them.
There is one I cannot stand, and one I really, really liked.
Yeah.
I think people can guess which one is which.
And both of these films have actresses that you love.
Oh, my. I mean, Gunpowder, for God's sakes, Gunpowder Milkshake, Karen Gillan, Angela Bassett, who should have been starred back in the day.
Yep.
But she wasn't famous enough.
Mm-hmm.
Carla Gugino.
Mm-hmm.
And the great Michelle Yeoh.
Yep.
And let's throw in Leah Hedy while we're at it.
Absolutely.
That's like supposed to be Tom Catnip.
Yeah, it pretty much is, folks. And the funny thing is, I just finished watching and recording an episode of a different show for the part two of Masters of the Universe Revelation animated series on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And the only reason why I'm saying this is because Lena Headey is the voice of Evil-Lyn on that show. And I did not remember. Like, I've looked at the information for Gunpowder Milkshake, but I didn't really remember it when I went to watch the film today. And I'm like, Oh, hey, that's Evil-Lyn. Wow, cool. You know, that is awesome. And what it's I'm trying to think. Who is in the other in the Protégé? Protégé was
Maggie Q. Her debut in American cinemas with Die Hard. Was it Die Hard with a Vengeance? Yeah, I think it was Die Hard with a Vengeance.
No. It was Die Hard 4. It was Live Free or Die Hard. Because she was... Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because she was the main henchman who should have been the main villain, but...
Yeah.
She did a lot of work in television. She was the third Nikita...
Mm-hmm.
In the WB remake of the USA remake of the French film La Femme Nikita.
Yeah.
She was in Designated Survivor for a while. She was in a really gross show called Stalkers.
You know what?
Created by Kevin Williamson.
Yeah, Stalker 2014, 2015. I watched and did podcasts about that show because it was her. Because I had seen her in so many, like, her, I would say, like you mentioned, Live Free or Die Hard was kind of her breakout. I would also put in Mission Impossible 3 because Zen Lee, she played Zen Lee in that. And she was like, oh, hey, there's this new awesome action female star. But Stalker was, it was really creepy. It only got one season. She's in the only video game she's ever done was Need for Speed Undercover, which I absolutely love that game.
Okay. The thing is that once again, we have here, and can we at least agree that it's a big pile of bull dookie that women can't carry action movies?
Yeah, that's dumb.
I actively am excited when certain people I've always said that if let's say Tessa Thompson is doing an action film, I'm there. Mm-hmm. Taraji P. Henson. I still want to do that version of Coffee.
Yeah.
I want to do for Coffee what they did for Shaft.
Yeah.
Before Pam Grier dies. So have Pam Grier be grandmommy Coffee. Taraji B. Henson, Mommy Coffee, and Tessa Thompson B. Coffee.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be awesome. I mean, you know, you look at the, you know, females in the action genre, and I can think of just off the top of my head a number of them that they're just not get like. They've been talking about the Expendables for years now, and I don't think that if that ever happens, great, absolutely, I'm there for whoever is in it. I, you know, whatever. But it's like they've been talking about that for years. But just off the top of my head, Mira Sorvino in The Replacement Killers from 1997 or 1998, she kicked ass in that movie. Let's see who.
Know that one of my favorite unsung female action stars is Cynthia Rothrock, who was a major deal in Hong Kong during the mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
And then came here to America, and they did a bunch of crap that was direct to video with her and wasted her.
Yeah.
But I mean, you look at Yes, Madam, or Righting Wrongs, or any one of the number of films she did in Hong Kong, and she is freaking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I need to exchange some books.
Come.
Well, girl,
you'll need a Jane Austen.
A Virginia Woolf.
And an Agatha Christie. For reading.
Your talents are needed. Somebody stole from us. We need that money back.
Let's change the plan. They kidnapped an 8-year-old girl. I can't leave her to die.
Oh, you know the drill. Give the kill order.
Some bad men are coming to hurt us.
We have to go where it's safe.
Okay.
I'm gonna teach you to always guard your back. Hi, Mom.
Am I a grandmother?
God, no.
Where have you been for the last 15 years?
Around, making sure you're safe.
I'm gonna do terrible things to you girls.
We're gonna bring the sky down on their heads.
I'm coming for you.
God damn it.
I'm gonna make a little noise.
Remember who you're dealing with.
You're bleeding.
It's just a scratch.
You can get infected. Worms will get in there and lay eggs, and then they'll have to cut your arm off.
That's what they teach you in school these days?
Getting into gunpowder. Oh, boy.
Yes. Okay, first off, I know this is, I'm just going to go with the nitpick first.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't they just let Karen, if Lena Headey was allowed to use her accent, why couldn't Karen Gillan use her accent?
She has
a lovely accent. She has a lot. Whenever she tries to do an American, basically the American, it comes off very, very flat.
Yeah.
To me.
Like, I noticed that in this where she sounds, like you said, she sounds flat.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap, I'm older than she is? Oh my god. Whew. She was born in 87. Holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in 80. Anyway, maybe it's a character thing, I don't know, but her voice, her Americanized, you know, accent voice, as you said,
it sound for this character, it sounds very robotic, and it's not a bad thing because the character is she's an assassin. She's very robotic. She's supposed to just go in, shoot, and get the hell out. I don't know if a Scottish accent, you know, her normal voice would have worked for the character. Maybe it would have. We don't know. But I can see where you're coming from, where it's like,
It would have been a different thing if Lena Headey was also doing an American accent. I would have accepted it.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
one or the other, not both. So, but anyway, enough about accents. That's the nitpickiest of nitpicks.
Oh, man. Yeah, as soon as I saw this, I was like, holy crap, this is going to be awesome. So basically, this is, I don't want to say it's a female John Wick movie, but it kind of is.
It definitely is.
It's very much influenced by the John Wick franchise, which isn't a... I didn't dislike this film. I like both of the films that we're going to talk about. I don't know if I have so many nitpicks, though. I don't know if I have... Like, I would say that the... Showing, like, if I'm going to really, like, really nitpick something... In the parking garage.
The parking garage. I was about to say, why do they have hunting diorama in the middle of the library?
I don't know. They're assassins. They're a League of Lady Assassins. I'm not sure. If I was going to get like any nitpick out of the way, it would probably be the parking garage scene where the car goes into the other thing. And like I said earlier, severed head and it was a quick little thing. It's not going to take any points off for me, you know, for my enjoyment of the film, because they didn't leave the camera there so long. Yeah. But the basic plot of this is, her Sam, played by Karen Gillan, is an assassin for Paul Giamatti. Oh, God. I love him.
For The Firm.
Yes, the firm. Yeah.
We have no fucking idea.
No clue. Nope. Again, it's a John Wick thing. It's a, this or that or whatever. Oh, God, can you imagine, erase this entire plot, but take all of these actors and actresses and put them in an Airwolf reboot and have Paul Giamatti with an eye patch over his eye as Archangel. It's like, oh, God, that would be hilarious. So basically, Sam's an assassin. She didn't really botch the job, but she killed the wrong person, and now everybody's after her, essentially. And we run into, she goes to kill this other guy, and this other guy has a daughter, and now we have a kid sidekick, and she wants to be Sam's apprentice. And I thought it was kind of cool, like, kind of cute. I don't necessarily think any child should be looking up to an assassin. Yeah. But for the...
Go ahead.
A lot of the movie, for how the movie is and the fact that she has to basically be her apprentice helping her because the doctor shot her arm up with drugs that basically paralyze her arm. That was funny. It's not funny that it happened to her, but it's like, I can't move my arms. I have to, it's like, oh my God. I don't know. It's just...
I got the impression while watching this film that the director and her co-writer came up with the action sequences first and then built the story around it.
Yeah.
And the one thing that got missing, characterization.
Yeah.
The problem is, these characters aren't characters.
Yeah.
And I look at, for goodness sakes, one of them was nominated for an Academy Award once.
Yeah.
And it was such a waste. It really was. And it just was, I got tired of, okay, so how many, it's 2 minutes, it's time for another crazy action sequence that is totally over the top with, and we still don't know really anything about anybody.
Yeah.
And also, we talked about it being John Wick. It's also the Leon the Professional.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it does.
It's Leon the Professional, only without all the Leon the Professional, you know, all the, once again, characterization that's put into that film of Leon.
Yeah.
With,
yeah.
It's, I was very angry because I was like, you have this stellar cast knows how to do this kind of film.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically wasted it. It was kind of like when I saw a couple of years ago a film called Polar for Dread Media, which was, you got the impression it was sold solely on the fact of Mads Mikkelsen gets to be John Wick. And there was all this artifice and weirdness and stuff, but no real characters.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same thing. It's people seeing John Wick saying, oh, I get it now. And making a film they think is like John Wick, but really gets the question totally wrong.
Right. So
I just felt really, I felt really sad for a lot of these, because Michelle Yeoh doesn't get a chance to,
her big scene is, and it actually reminded me of, I was like, hey, wait a second. Am I in 2021 or am I in 1997? It reminded me of Wei Lin pulling the chains to get herself up in like, seriously, this film is like Tomorrow Never Dies of, you know, today kind of thing, because that's the whole thing. Every time I saw Michelle Yeoh on screen, I'm like, it's Wei Lin. It's not Wei Lin, but it's Wei Lin.
And shame on Netflix for only releasing stills of her with the eye patch, which she only gets at the very, very end.
Yeah.
Because you're like, wow, Michelle Yeoh with an eye patch. Pirate Michelle Yeoh. Down for that.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
And but it was go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish what you were saying.
The villains are literally tendons.
Yeah.
Since a part of this film does take place in a bowling alley, and for the bulk of the film, Sam is wearing a bowling jacket.
Yes.
So, which is the Fierce Purrs or something?
Yeah,
it was something very female, kind of related. Wink, wink.
Yeah, it was.
You never got a unlike with the next film, you never get a sense of Sam's relationship with Paul Giamatti. You never get really any. Oh, you get told Sam's left her. And I think it's more, but this film is more about setting up a world and setting up crazy action stunts.
Yeah.
And they figured that would be enough to get people to want to see more. They don't realize, they forgot that in John Wick, time is spent with Keanu Reeves' character so that we understand him. And it was bleh. I was very disappointed, particularly because it was such a waste of all of these great actresses who I know are capable of doing better.
And I'm wondering if that's the fact that this is a Netflix film and the whole film industry kind of changing and evolving into let's make movies for streaming, because as far as I can see, the only place that this got a actual theatrical release was, you know, I mean, it got a simultaneous limited theatrical release in the U.S., but then it also got one in the U.K. and Ireland, but that was like 3 months later in September of this year.
The shift towards streaming is a double-edged sword. On one hand, you can do films that are more specific. You don't have to worry about the four-wall quadrant full crap.
Yeah.
So that's why it puts out original movies every month. But the thing is, they are horror movies designed to appeal to the people who come to this streaming service for horror films. Hallmark puts out, it seems, 10 Christmas movies a minute.
But it's more like 100 Christmas movies a minute, but yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is that there is a fan base there that is willing to support that probably wouldn't go and see 100 Christmas movies throughout the year in the theaters. But on the other hand, you have these things where films might be done before they're fully ready.
Yeah.
It could have used a couple of more passes of the script to flesh out who Sam was, what the relationship was between, like, I think somebody mentioned in the promotion of this film that Carla Gugino and Michelle Yeoh were supposed to be lovers. You would not know that from the film.
You only know it from one very, very small scene close to the end when they bend down and she kisses her. It's like blink and you miss it.
Yeah, we needed to see. And these are actresses that are, I want to emphasize, these actresses are capable of doing this so type much. Of work.
Yeah.
While also kicking all of the ass in alphabetical order, color-coded for each reference.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree. It's crazy to me that with, like you said, the double-edged sword of the streaming thing.
Yeah.
This film had a $30 million budget, and the box office, it made $1 million at the box office. Now, maybe that's because it's only a limited theatrical release, and it's more on the streaming thing, and Netflix never really Netflix never really shows their numbers as far as what money is made of.
That limited release is probably just to qualify for the Academy Awards.
Yeah, probably.
They're hoping maybe some special effects Academy Awards. I can't imagine it for acting. But that's probably it. And you're right. The thing is, Netflix did not release its numbers. Neither do any of the. I think, is it Amazon Prime started releasing their numbers? Somebody started releasing their numbers. But, I mean, the problem is, it was all artifice. It was all crazy stunt after crazy stunt, and nobody bothered to actually think about telling a good story with good characters.
Again, I agree. At the same time, I didn't think it was a, like, as I watched it, I didn't want to turn it off. It wasn't like going to the theater, paying my money, sitting in the theater for, let's say, 5 minutes as the film comes up, and I see this ring on this white guy's hand that just, nope, that's not how the Green Lantern ring looks. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. It wasn't like...
But you see, that's the good thing about streaming is that I would have, if this was a theatrical release, mm-hmm. I would have gone to see it based on the cast. And I would have been fuming. Steam would have been coming out of my ears, flames, yep. The whole nine yards.
Flames on the side of my face.
Rest in peace, Dylan Kahn, perhaps the funniest person ever to walk the earth. Anyways, and Netflix is counting on you going, well, yeah, I didn't care for it, but you know what? It was quote unquote for free.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't feel bad for having to sit through it.
Yeah, but I still enjoyed it.
Thing is with this Red Notice film that they did.
Oh God, I probably won't watch Red Notice. Most likely, I have zero interest right now. Anyway,
okay.
I think for me with Gunpowder Milkshake, I think the reason why I enjoyed it was because it was a very simple story. You're right, and I agree. The characters needed more time to develop and grow throughout the mm-hmm. film. But
considering we're talking about a film that is 2 hours in length.
Yeah, it's 114 minutes, folks. If you can't get all your character development in 2 hours, then you need better writers.
Or if this was what it was only at 85 minutes,
mm-hmm.
I would have taken it a lot better.
Okay, so what would you have cut out to make it 85 minutes?
What would I have cut out? I have to look at it again, and I'm not looking at it again. No. I like looking at Karen Gillan and Michelle Yeoh and Carla Gugino and Angela Bassett. I'm not planning on looking at this again.
That's fine. I would probably trim the bowling alley stuff. I would trim that by at least half. Like, just
you
make
don't even
it
need a bowling alley. Have yeah. me at directly at the video store.
Yeah, that was like I really thought at first they were like in the back of the bowling alley, and then I'm like, wait, no, they're not. They're in a completely different location. This is useless.
They had the fight with the boneheads.
True. Yeah.
Which? Why do we need the boneheads at all?
And then
wouldn't it have been more impressive if the boneheads showed up after the video store and after all this stuff, and she's got her things, and they're fully able,
yep.
and she's got the lack of use of both of her arms, and she beats the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been more impressive?
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been. And then because she does what she does to the boneheads, they go to the doctor's office to find her and the kid and whatever else, and we get a scene later with the doctor and the boneheads in there, and I'm like, really? We needed four people to replace Mel Gibson and Joe Pesci and Danny Glover. Yeah. Like, seriously, the first thing I thought with the laughing, I'm like, it's laughing gas. It's, I'm sleeping with my wife's two sisters, and my wife doesn't know about, I love Uncle Benny. I love that guy. Mm-hmm. Heaven, it never happened anytime soon, but because I know he's up there in age, but that actor that played Uncle Benny in Lethal, I love that guy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that scene was like, okay, so now you're
the doctor has a soul.
Yeah.
There are some hints about him.
Yeah.
But there's no... You could cut the Dr. Hope. You could have cut the time with the nurse, the receiving nurse.
Yep.
Because the receiving nurse and the diner waitress.
Now, the diner waitress, I think we needed, because that was cool. That was the safe zone. That was okay. That didn't last as long as, like, some of the doctor stuff did or some of the nurse stuff did.
Yeah, no, but the thing is that both the nurse – I'm talking about the waitress specifically, not the diner itself.
Right.
Is that the main purpose for both of these characters is just to establish how the world works.
Yeah.
Once again, there's so much thought put into how the world works that there's no thought put into how the characters work.
Yeah.
And that was my biggest problem. That was my biggest problem. It's like, okay, yes, all right. So I don't know. It's like, okay, so we've got this library and every book apparently has a gun in it.
Or some sort of useful, yeah.
Yeah. A hunting diorama. I'm like, what's that lion doing there?
I did enjoy the library scenes, and I did enjoy the diner scenes, because those, to me, again, they are the sort of safe zones. They are, you know, the female assassin, you know, the library specifically, that's their base of operations. And I thought that was kind of clever, because honestly, you don't see much done with libraries in films nowadays.
I wonder if this film would have been better if we did not have the Lena Headey character at all.
Yeah, if
we were primarily on this relationship between her and her surrogate mothers.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, but it is what it is. It is the way they set it up, and, you know.
I mean, even the title is meant to be edgy, cool. Yeah. There is a definite emphasis on cool over logical in this film, but.
Yeah.
And I just, at first I was like, oh, give me a break. By about the 2/3 mark, I was like, oh, fuck this movie. Just fuck this movie. And I was dreading looking at the protege. I was absolutely dreading the protege because I'm like, okay, we have Samuel Jackson in it.
Yeah.
Okay, I think I can see what kind of character he's playing.
Mm-hmm.
But I was surprised.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. With Gunpowder, I dug it, but I see its flaws. And if I was going to score it, on our rating scale 0 to 5 with half points, I would probably give Gunpowder a 3 or 3.5 out of 5. I enjoyed what I saw, but I see that the story needed to be fleshed out a little bit more, and I hate the fact that they couldn't do that with the time. Like, this isn't Transformers, this isn't Terminator, this isn't Lethal Weapon, Die Hard, this isn't any of these this is, like, I hate to say it, they have, like you said, amazing big budget actresses and actors in this film. But this film feels like lowball cinema. It's a good film, but it just doesn't feel like it's blockbuster.
Yeah, it reminds me of all those films that came out after Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction hit in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
where, absolutely. Like I said, they were so intent, because remember when Reservoir Dogs hit, we had this whole slew crime films where everybody was making pop culture references.
Yeah.
And that was what made Reservoir Dogs different.
Yep.
And this was, I think this was like that. It felt like that very much. But,
yep.
You know, it's on Netflix, so people are going to still watch it. You know, they're going to watch Red Notice, just like they're going to watch. Just like they watched The Empty House. God, that thing sucked when it came out. You know, the 15 other really bad films that Des and I reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
However, there was one. If people want to see a good crime film, and you will be surprised. Check out Army of Thieves.
Okay.
Army of Thieves, a great crime film. Yes, there are zombies, but they're very, very, it's a very, very small part of it. It is a great caper film.
Okay, so before we take a quick break, what would you give 0 to 5 for Gunpowder?
It's what I'm trying to look at it objectively, because, you know, subjectively, I'm so angry at the way they wasted some of my major crush objects.
Yep.
So I would probably have to give it 2 objectively, although much lower subjectively.
Okay. Well, good news for us, folks. There's supposedly a sequel confirmed to be in the works, and I don't know where the hell they could go from here, because they drive off into the sunset at the end of the film. But
the thing also, that last sequence with a kid showing up at Paul Giamatti's door.
Yep.
That screams, wait for part 2.
Yep, it does.
It's coming part 2. Whereas in the next film we're going to talk about, there's kind of a definitive ending to it.
Oh, yeah, there's very, very much a definitive ending. So we're going to take a quick break. You're going to hear some stuff, and we'll come back after this.
In, get out.
You can always think on your feet anyway.
Not so much tonight.
That's what friends are for, right?
Oh, good. We're friends again.
I find you interesting. I'm an after the facts guy. Boss has a problem. He calls me. You guys have no idea who you're dealing with.
I'm going to find out who killed my friend.
That'd be unwise.
Unwise is killing a man who was a second father to me. I'm going to end their life and anyone standing in my way.
You got some very bad people looking for you.
Take these things personally.
We are way past personal.
I'd really like to see you again under, you know, different circumstances.
These are the best circumstances you'll ever see me in.
All right, folks, we are back. And now we're going to talk about The Protégé, directed by Mr. Goldeneye himself, Martin Campbell.
Martin Campbell, great director, very good with action.
Yes.
And like I said, I got no going in that this was a Martin Campbell film.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the end credits, and I'm that explains a lot of why I like this film so much.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, between, you know, all the stuff he's done, Criminal Law, Defenseless, No Escape, GoldenEye, Mask of Zorro, Vertical Limit, Legend of Zorro, Casino Royale, Edge of Darkness. Oh, ooh, I forgot. Speaking of a 10-year anniversary, how the hell, even if it's work for hire, how the hell is Green Lantern so goddamn bad when it's Martin fucking Campbell as the director? That makes no sense to me.
I think it was because, quite frankly, Green Lantern wasn't a Martin Campbell film. It was a Warner Brothers DC film.
Right, yeah.
That's what comes from. And after Green Lantern did The Foreigner, with Jackie Chan, which is a very, very sober film.
Right.
My mother wants to go see it because she loves Jackie Chan because she thinks of Jackie Chan as, here I am doing wacky shit, and I don't care that I broke my leg. I'm still doing all wacky shit.
Yeah.
She's not happy. Seeing this very dour, very grim movie about vengeance.
Yes. Yes. However, The Protégé, at first I was like, wait, this is the 21st century version of The Long Kiss Goodnight. I dig this. I don't know if I would go that far.
I don't know if I would go that far because Anna, the character in this film, played by Maggie Q, isn't brainwashed / sleeper agented into another life.
True.
She chooses to have this other life running this bookshop because she loves books and she loves interact with people, apparently.
Right, yeah.
Which is why and Moody gives her the gift of the lease, the stores, as it's yours now. She's so touched by it.
Yeah. So you have, at least, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but just looking at the cast, you have four stars in this film between Maggie Q, Samuel Jackson, Michael Keaton, Robert Patrick. Watching this and knowing that Michael Keaton is coming back as Batman, I'm like, motherfucker, he's got it. Like, all I needed to see was some of his action scenes in this movie. I'm like, yep, just put him in a damn bat suit and he still has it. Like, holy crap. Michael Keaton surprises me.
The interactions between Michael Keaton and Maggie Q are the best things in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have a palatable chemistry. They are very fun together.
Yep.
And when they throw down, it looks serious. It doesn't look like it doesn't look wacky. There is Martin Campbell is one of those people who knows that you have to create geography as well as choreography when you're doing a fight scene. So you understand where everything is involved. He and Maggie Q are great together. And you kind of almost stick together.
Yeah. Seriously. Like, some of their later fight scene in Duquette's house or in the house or wherever the hell they are, you know, running around fighting each other. I'm like, holy crap, this is, like, again, referencing other films, even though this is more serious than the film I'm going to reference. I'm like, holy crap, you take Maggie Q and Michael Keaton and make a sequel to Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and bam, you know, there you go. You got you had Brad and Angelina in the original, and now you have these, because literally, I could see these two in all kinds of action thriller things, doing stuff like this. I loved this. I thought this was great. And then you throw in Samuel.
Go ahead.
And then you throw in Samuel Jackson in the mix as her kind of like foster father who faked his own. I'm like, damn, man, he's playing Nick Fury in every film, isn't he?
He's basically playing Leon the Professional.
Right.
He finds Anna at a very young age and takes her under his wing because he kind of recognizes you're already a killer. And the thing about this film is that the script, which is by Richard Wenk, and I have to assume that Campbell had some hand as well, they take the time to give us a sense of these characters at rest, if you will.
Yeah.
So that when they start beating the crap out of each other, we feel it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are emphasizing with them.
Absolutely, yeah.
And there are moments in this film which are very telegraphed. There are two things that are mentioned early on in the sequence in the third act at the big mansion house.
Right.
Where I said, okay, so the resolution is going to involve that and that. But it's still enjoyable.
Yeah.
And I really was very appreciative of it. And in this one, by the way, 109 minutes, so it's shorter. And yet it packs more into its film than Vampire Milkshake does.
Yeah. It really does. It gives you more about the characters. You see the sort of father-daughter adoptive thing that Maggie Q and Samuel Jackson have. You see the kind of it's not necessarily romantic, but let's just call it romantic animosity that she and Michael Keaton have. And you see everybody else like just waiting to die, essentially.
I love the fact you get the impression Keaton's kind of rooting for her at some point.
Yep.
Where he's telling people, you don't know her.
You don't know what you're dealing with.
He's like, it's on your head then.
Yeah. I will say for me, the only negatives I have with this is, again, that big mystery of, somebody's behind all of this and that person was supposed to die 30 years ago, but they didn't and blah, blah, blah. But the point of me bringing that up is saying that I have a problem with it is like immediately the henchman Duquette shoots the guy. He shoots Vol and I'm like, wait. We don't know what Vol was going to, was Vol really going to roll over and, sing? Right. Like, we don't know what he was going to do. And immediately, like, even, and you see this and you feel this with the look on her face when that happens, I'm like, she didn't expect that at all. And we get this mystery of Edward Hayes or whatever is.
But we know that Edward Hayes is still alive.
Yeah.
The thing we know it's still alive, and yet he's still alive, and yet they're trying to make a mystery out of it.
Yeah, they're trying to make a mystery out of it, and the other part of the mystery is his son. Like they try to play up his son a lot, and anytime anybody mentions the son's name, 2 seconds later they're dead. Holy crap. What's this mystery supposed to be? And that's where I think that's the only point where I think this film falls flat. Is not on a whole, but just this one point of the whole. I almost want to say it's a misdirect with the son because it's like,
the son is a misdirect when we learn he's been in this care facility for so long and he's dying.
Yeah.
But the whole point is, it's only because they started showing interest in the son that Edward Hayes came out of the woodwork.
Right, yeah.
But this is just, it's just, it's so much better because it is about the characters.
Yep.
It is about Anna, and it is about... the only thing I probably would not have done is I really thought the flashbacks in the third act were gratuitous.
Yeah, that was a little much.
We really didn't need to know more other than she obviously killed captors and movie found her. And decided to take care of her. Yeah. That's all we need to know. We didn't need all those flashbacks to leading up to that moment that we saw at the very beginning of the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was very I see Martin Campbell. I said, "Ah, oh, that explains it."
That yes,
explains
that,
it.
That explains everything. I did think that the flashback and the I'm like, wait, what? Because it, you know, she, you know, so in the film, Moody sneaks into Edward's bunker. And, you know, while Anna is being pursued by Rembrandt, who obviously Michael Keaton, and Moody blows up the bomb in the bunker that he apparently planted in there, which is fine, killing both himself and Edward. And then we get to the flashback and it's like, wait, why are we going to this flashback now? And again, another film with a beheading. What is the deal with beheadings lately?
I don't.
I don't understand it. I do love the ending though with them.
Yeah.
With Rembrandt and Anna. I hope she didn't kill him. But
right.
I understand why she would. And yeah, sadly, there's no information that I can find so far that this is getting a sequel. But I think if
it doesn't need a sequel, it tells its story. I kind of think that in my head canon, when Michael Keaton said there's other ways of doing this, he was actually saying, let's just get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because I'm thinking, I want to see. That's what I wanted to see is those two together at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they are fun together. They are. Yes. They are enjoyable to watch the two of them together.
Yes, and it's very rare lately that I see. I mean, honestly, these are the first two films that are not. Franchise. I'm just going to say franchise films, but you know what I mean. Like, they're not Marvel. They're not DC. They're not this. They're not that. They're not things that I've known for 40. That, again, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast episode was because, holy crap, these are two films that when I saw the trailers of each of them, I'm like, ooh, this is going to be fun. Regardless of issues with either film, I still had fun watching both of these.
Right.
Protégé.
That's the sad thing, is that nostalgia is the...
Right.
To quote Red Letter Media, nostalgia is the cocaine of the 2020s.
True. It very much is.
I will not go on that rant that I kind of went on Facebook the other day.
Uh-oh.
About a certain writer director's image being used in a certain film, which I thought was disrespectful.
Right.
But it's actually hurting the properties we keep coming back to.
Yeah.
In that because now we only want from that first film, so to speak, or that first and second film.
Yeah.
We are not allowing the property to grow. We are not allowing the potential. I mean, Star Wars had the potential to be enormous property because it was literally a whole new galaxy that we could have told so many different stories, and they did.
Yeah.
During the expanded universe years.
Yeah.
But now it's the one time somebody tried to do something different with it, he got pilloried, and the next film was all, we're sorry, here's all the toys back, here's Billy D. Williams, even though he can hardly walk. You know, here's all this stuff back. And, oh, yeah, the thing that we said about Rey, we were wrong. It was actually the Emperor's daughter. Oh, I'm like, bull, fuck you. You're basically it's making the world smaller rather than allowing it to expand and evolve and become something else. And we're not allowing generations after us to discover their own things that they're going to feel nostalgic. We're saying, you're going to feel nostalgic for this.
Yeah. And, you know, I love nostalgia. And I do agree with you. It's, you know, to quote Shredder in Turtles 2, you know, small doses through future mutants, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I do agree, but the thing of it is that we sadly live on nostalgia, but I do, and this podcast is, you know, this episode is proof that I do expand out into other things that are not for,
more new stuff, as well as more of the old stuff.
The it's problem? Yeah.
Where are the Zoomer kids going to find their Star Wars?
Yeah.
Or their Transformers? Yeah. Or their G.I. Joe?
Yeah.
And we're constantly forcing our G.I. Joe and our Transformers down their throat. It has to be exactly like it was when we saw it in the 80s.
Yeah. And go ahead. We will be doing a much larger discussion on this because I think we need to do a return to the Modern Fandom Manifesto.
I've been thinking about that a lot lately. Actually.
Yeah, because
I just want to make one point here. There was recently announcement that they were going to do a remake of The Last Starfighter, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Because The Last Starfighter, you know, it's 40 years old.
Yep.
It really wasn't, didn't have as big a footprint as it could have been.
Right.
And the basic concept is still sound. You can reset it and rework it for the modern age. But no, because all the old characters are going to be back.
Yep. I think nobody the problem. Wants to... Good.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like Last Starfighter. I could see, you know, teenagers of today getting into Last Starfighter if it's given a proper remake.
Right.
I cannot see them getting excited about Lance, what's his name? And, you know, here's that character, and here's this character, and here's Robert Preston's corpse.
Oh, what did I just watch the other day? I just watched again for the first time in a long time. Innerspace from 1987 with Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan and all of that, Martin Short. And I looked at that and I'm like, there is no way that anyone, any person today that is younger than 45 years old, would be willing to watch a remake of Innerspace because they need to modernize it. And the thing of it is that the problem I see is that if you put, like, okay, you take these two films, whether Gunpowder's sequel actually goes through or not, but let's just take Gunpowder and Protégé as single one-shot films, beginning, middle, and end.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed them both. They're new things to me, even though they have a bunch of, at least what I infer, as references to other things and other whatever, or I see things in films that, you know, whatever. I still enjoyed what I watched, but I didn't need to know 40 or 50 years of things. I think the problem in the future is with creating new things is that people aren't going to like the new things and they want their old things like G.I. Joe, like Transformers, like Star Wars, like whatever, insert franchise here.
I did not see the new G.I. Joe for one reason, because it was like, hey, we're going to put Samara, and you know how much I love Samara Weaving. We're going to put Samara Weaving Scarlet. So she's going to be running around doing action stuff and shooting people. Totally in the fucking film.
Yeah, it's...
why are we so obsessed with the origins of stuff?
Well, that's the other side of it that I think that...
Yeah.
That is...
Here's an idea. Tell a good story with the characters first, and if we want more, we'll let you know.
I will say that with these two films and the flashbacks that they did, even though the flashback at the third act of The Protégé might have been misused, I will say that the flashbacks to give the backstory without having to fully tell an origin story were good. But with the franchises, the thing with needing to retell or tell an origin story is to hook those people. Like, if my late wife and I, Karen, had children, it's to hook them into the franchise. That's why you have all these reboots and remakes that are telling the origin stories, because it's like, we need to get the kiddies of today hooked into these, and it's just not going to happen.
The other thing that worries me a lot, and it's the reason why a number of films fell totally flat for me, is that they're being made with the intention of there being a franchise.
Yeah.
So instead of thinking about telling, and that's what I think is part of the problem with Gunpowder Milkshake, instead of concentrating on telling a good story, they concentrated on setting up a world that they thought we would want to visit over and over again.
Yeah.
And the main reason I disliked the Neil Marshall Hellboy, which I went to in the theaters because I love Neil Marshall and support the people you love.
Right.
Was that it was all about setting up all the cool things in the world and didn't really tell a story.
Yeah.
So I was like, you could see the puppet strings going, oh yeah, here's Lobster Johnson, but you'll learn about him next time. Oh,
Tom, you are putting things in my head so much right now. All I heard right there is the promotion for Age of Ultron. There are no strings on me, and then of course, poor Terrence Howard. Next time, you ain't getting no next time, dude. Sorry about your luck. Don Cheadle is no machine.
We're sorry, Terrence Howard. You don't get it. Robert Downey Jr. gets a raise because he's worthy. You know, we need him. You don't have as much. So you'll get the same amount of money if you'd like. But we're not giving you a raise. Then again, we're also talking about, yes, Scarlett Johansson, we didn't make anything off of your film because nobody went to see it in the theaters. But it was on streaming.
Yeah, I have not finished. I have not even finished Black Widow. I think I'm like 10 or 20 minutes into it. It's not that I don't want to watch it. I just, things have been going on in my life that I haven't had time to finish it. And the time that I need to.
You know, the stuff about Natasha and her quote unquote sister and her father and her mother. Is all good stuff. However, because this is a Marvel movie, every 10 minutes they have to stop and have a crazy action sequence. And the third act bugged the crap out of me because I'm like, Black Widow, okay, she's a spy. She should not be fighting people in a castle in the sky.
No,
like you lost me at Castle in the Sky. I understand that your villain is supposed to look like Harvey Weinstein, played Ray Firestone. Understand that there's a whole misuse of women theme to the movie, but you lose me with the giant castle in the sky. I've not seen Shang-Chi yet. I have not seen.
I have no interest in Shang-Chi. I have no interest.
What depressed me was learning that there were magical creatures in there. Because I'm like, okay, Shang-Chi, fairly straightforward martial arts film.
Yep.
Cool martial arts adventure film.
Yep.
Bring Jimmy Woo in from the anime movies.
Yep.
And just have fun. But no, there are there are dragons.
Yeah, there's always a dragon somewhere. Like,
look, some of the Eternals are fun characters. I actually think Cersei is a fun character. I loved her in the much maligned Bob Harris, Steve Epting Avengers run.
Okay.
That is actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
But the Eternals are fourth-rate characters.
Yeah.
And yet you're taking the characters who are big names, like Ms. Marvel, the most popular original character Marvel has made in the past, since Wolverine, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know if you would count them as original, quote. But Ms. Marvel, they are hiding her because they don't want the certain members of our society to be up in arms that we have an actual Pakistani hero.
Well, you know what? You look at the Avengers video game. She was the star of that. Marvel's the Avenger. Kamala Khan was the main playable character in the Avengers video game. And I think that's awesome. And it is what it is. I don't need to,
it upset me when I heard about they announced Captain America 4 or whatever they're going to call it. Right. First off, they already did Captain America 4. It was called The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and it could have been a movie.
Yeah.
That could have been called Captain America Legacy.
Yep.
And it probably would have been a lot of money, and not just because my favorite character in the Marvel Universe was in it. But the fact that they're saying that, well, Captain America 4, Sam Wilson has to prove that he's worthy of Captain America. And I'm like,
didn't he already do that?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, first off, hi, I'm Steve Rogers, Captain America. I choose you, Sam.
Yeah.
Okay, so Sam goes, I don't know if I'm ready. Then says, hi, yes, I'm ready. And makes a big speech on television.
Yeah.
How he's going to run the Captain America franchise? And he still has to prove himself?
I don't know
That's a stop to a certain section of this country right now.
Yeah.
Who are just horrified by the idea of a non-white character.
I love...
I'm sorry. I'm getting into politics.
I know you are. It's okay. It is what it is. I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and this is a discussion we can continue on another show, another day. I will say it all comes down to character. And as soon as Anthony Mackie showed up as Sam Wilson and, mm-hmm. you know, the on your left scene, I was like, okay, bam, Anthony Mackie is my new favorite actor. He's my new favorite this, that, and the other thing. And I really, really dig him as the Sam Wilson Falcon / Captain America. Mm-hmm. I don't care about anything anyone wants to put into it. I don't care if Chris Evans as Steve Rogers or even whomever I forget off the top of my head who played old Steve at the end of the movie. Steve Rogers says, you know, Sam Wilson's the guy. Sam Wilson's the guy. I don't give a shit about the rest of it. I just don't.
Sam Wilson, Captain America, you know, Steve Rogers said it. Jim Rhodes says it.
Exactly. There you go.
Says it.
Yes, everybody says it. Yeah.
The cinematic universe who has a say in it that's still alive at this point, it's Bucky. He's like, you should be Captain America. Hey, I even made a costume for you.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I mean, hell, even
what's her name? Nebula will show up and she'll say it. Because, you know, Nebula was the gunpowder milkshake of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
And, I mean, the problem I've been having with the TV shows is that they're still doing the formula. Where, like, WandaVision was a really great look at dealing with grief and mental illness.
Yep.
Dealing with PTSD.
And Winter Soldier was dealing with legacy and all that, but go ahead, sorry.
But and I found that part of WandaVision very fascinating.
I did too.
And very true to my own journey as someone who suffered from mental illness.
Right.
And then she and Jessica Hahn are up in the sky throwing bolts at each other.
Well, again, it's Marvel, and you need some sort of action thing close to the end of the thing. And, like, okay, if you're going to do 6-episode series, you have an action scene, you know, a big action scene, like a big movie action scene every third episode. So episode 3 and episode 6 should have those big action scenes, and especially with WandaVision, the rest of it should have been all character development and character depth. Yeah,
it should have been. And it's not like Hawkeye. Like, Hawkeye I have not started watching yet, but I get the impression that Hawkeye is meant to be a caper.
It's meant to be
a wacky adventure. Oh, Hawkeye, what's Hawkeye going to do next against this person?
I need to rewatch them.
I have not watched them yet.
I need to rewatch them. I did watch them so far. I will tell you, without spoiling it for you, that it's going to feel like, as it progresses with Clint and Kate, it's going to feel like a buddy cop thing, sort of.
I always feel kind of sad that that Hawkingbird never caught on. I like the name Hawkingbird, which is what they used to call Kate before they just said, she's Hawkeye.
Yeah, she's Hawkeye. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I rather liked – but then again, she was also carrying a sword at the time too, which is maybe why they called her Hawkingbird.
Maybe. And, you know.
Anyway, that's neither here nor there. And, we will probably have to talk about fandom stuff we will need to talk about.
We will have to revisit that.
We disagree with gunpowder milkshake, but we both agree Protégé is really neat.
Yep. I will probably give
Protégé a 3.5.
I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay.
I really, really liked it. There were a few scenes of the, you know, shooting and the blood and stuff and whatever.
Yeah.
But again, overall, that I'm not going to take points off.
One other thing. Guys, and this is stop it with the CGI blood, okay? Serious, nothing takes me out of a movie more than a CGI blood spatter.
Yeah,
it's not that difficult to make quote unquote movie blood. Yeah. No, it's not.
Yeah, I don't understand, but I guess they have to cut corners somewhere. I'm not sure. I don't know. No,
every time they use it, it's like yanks me out of the film in me, because it's like, oh, look, it's CGI.
Yeah, and I'm not really for me, I don't, like, again, as I've said, even with John Wick and other films that are like these two films, or these two films are like those films, however you want to say it, like, I don't focus on that because I'm like, ooh, okay, well, there's that. Let's move on to the next part of the actual story of the film. Like, the action scenes I do focus on, but I try not to focus on the damage the action scenes cause. Yeah. So you're giving it a 3.5 or a 3, right? Okay, 3.5. I'm giving it a 4. I really dug it. If they make another one, great. However, this one stands on its own as a really good action thriller movie.
And
Anna and Rembrandt in suburbia,
mm-hmm.
trying to live a normal life. That's what I want to see. That's what I want to see. Okay?
There you
get
go.
Get on that, Mark Campbell.
Oh, crap. All right, well, folks.
Thanks for having me so we could talk about it.
Yes, absolutely.
It's not every day, because most people think of me as the horror guy now because I work so much with Des Reddick over at Dread Media. Please listen to Dread Media. It's fun. We had bears on the last episode.
I know you're more than that, though, because, hello, I've been listening to you on shows for years, and your entire back catalog of Better in the Dark and everything like that. So I know you are.
So weird being thought of as an elder statesman. Then it's like I've been doing this for almost 15 years now.
Yeah.
Oy.
Yeah. December will be December 8th or 12th, depending on which feed you look at. It will be my 13th anniversary since I started podcasting. So yeah, it's been a fun, crazy ride. And at this point, sadly, with my wife no longer with me anymore, I don't have any plans of stopping anytime soon.
Well, so, there you go.
We had a Gunpowder Milkshake with The Protégé and a lot of Marvel at the end, the middle there. I will recommend both of these films, but I will recommend The Protégé over Gunpowder because I do see its flaws. Are they movies?
And Tabitha is just ignoring us.
Of course she is.
Yes.
Of course she is. That's right. Those movies don't matter.
Assassin.
Do you have anything you would like to promote, sir, before I run through the outro?
9mm.
What? Wait, what?
Cato 9mm. That's what you call it. I'll serve it.
Do you have anything you would like to promote before I run through the closing of the show?
Okay, a couple of things. One, of course, is we referenced to it in that I am a one of the regular rotating co-hosts with Des Reddick of Dread Media, which can be available on the Earth2.net network every Monday. My good friend Chris Honeywell do the Honeywell Experiment, which examines independent and exploitation cinema from the on down through the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, of course, there is ATW, the audio drama company, which as of this recording right now, tomorrow we'll see the debut of the third season of our Strangers in Paradise adaptation. And we have we're in negotiations for two other comic adaptations.
Hmm.
One of which is a comic written by a guy that I've been friends with for many, 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 many years, and it's about a very special city. And the other one is by another friend of mine and his wife. And it's about a woman who probably would fit in pretty well with Gunpowder Milkshake. Let's leave it at that. But yeah, so just both Honeywell Experiment and the ATW stuff can be found on the Two True Freaks Network. So that I think is it. And
awesome.
Other stuff. And puppies. Yes,
and puppies and kittens and oh my. Thank you for joining us inside the studio. Yeah. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website geekcastradio.com where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. Send any email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. Here are all the ways you can listen to us nowadays. Apple and Google Podcasts, leave us reviews, please. Spotify and any other podcatching client you choose to use.
Follow us on Twitter at Geekcast Radio for the network at It's Studio 2009. So that's ITSSTUDIO 2009. I am at TFGU and Mike. What is your Twitter, sir?
At Nocturne Tom DJ.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Geekcast Radio Network. You can also search out Studio 2009 podcast over there as well. Join us next time when I think we're going to be doing another podcast approach, or we may be doing Free Guy with Steve Megatron. I'm not sure what we're doing for episode 30. For now, okay. I am TFGU and Mike with
Tom DJ
Tabitha.
And Tabitha. You'll hear us back in the studio soon.